Welcome to the HR Chat Show, one of the world's most downloaded and shared podcasts designed for HR pros, talent execs, tech enthusiasts, and business leaders. For hundreds more episodes and what's new in the world of work, subscribe to the show, follow us on social media, and visit hrgazette.com.
Welcome to another episode of the HR Chat Show. Hello, everybody. I'm your host today, Bill Bannum. And in this episode, we're going to talk about the cost of living and about the moral and business case for employers to embed living wage initiatives in their HR strategies. My awesome guest today is Gail Irvine, Head of Business Development and Policy over at the Living Wage Foundation. If you haven't heard of them yet, check them out. Gail joined the Living Wage Foundation back in October 2022 and is responsible for driving forward new projects that maximize voluntary employer approaches to tackle in-work poverty and promote good work. Hey, Gail, welcome to the show today.
Hello, very nice to be here.
So beyond my little introduction there, why don't you take a minute or two, Gail, and tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
I've been at the Living Wage Foundation for a couple of years. And before that, I was leading the Living Wage campaign in Scotland. And it's just, I've always been really passionate about good work, good employment, how we can make sure that the world of work is changing in a way that benefits ordinary people. And I think the Living Wage has always been one of the most exciting campaigns in the world of work. So it's an absolute dream for me to work for the Living Wage Foundation.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's talk a bit more about the mission of the Living Wage Foundation in just a moment. But before we get there, Gail, I think it's important to set a bit of context. We're mainly focusing on the UK and the situation in the UK. This is a global podcast. We've got listeners all over the place, but it's mainly focused on the UK. Although I think a lot of the lessons, a lot of the conversation actually is applicable in other places too. Let's start then by talking about the increase in the cost of living, specifically in the UK over the past couple of years. There have been various factors contributing to that. Some of those are more political than others. I won't get into my thoughts around Brexit. Your listeners already know about that. What are some of those factors that have contributed to the cost of living, and how bad has it got in the last couple of years, Gail?
It's got much worse than I think any of us could have imagined 3 years ago. It has been the real striking difference has been it's basically double-digit growth for the last 2 years, whereas we were used to seeing maybe 1 or 2% before that for a very long time, pretty much the whole duration of the Living Wage campaign, which is a wage rate that's based on changes in the cost of living. The main drivers, like you say, there's a lot to unpack there, but it's mostly been fueled by rising food and energy prices. And a lot of that has been caused by some of these big macroeconomic factors. You mentioned Brexit, but there's, of course, the contraction of the whole global economy during the pandemic and then what reopening did to the economy. And the war in Ukraine obviously has been a massive factor as well, particularly driving up energy prices. And I think the most important thing to say is that everyone's been affected by increased cost of living, but it does fall on the lowest paid people in society the hardest, because they spend much more of their earnings on the essentials like food and energy, like paying their rent and affording their bills. So it's been really important at the Living Wage campaign for us to ensure that the living wage rises in line with changes in the cost of living, and actually to make the case that a wage rate that's based on changes in the cost of living is needed now more than ever during a cost of living crisis.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the HR Chat Podcast. If you enjoy the content we produce, we'd be super grateful if you could subscribe and follow us on social media. And now, back to the show.
Okay, so my next question was going to be, tell me about the mission of the Living Wage Foundation. You touched upon it there. So more than ever, then, you guys are needed. Your mission is more critical than ever, right? What you're doing at the moment has got more impact than ever before. Is that fair to say?
Exactly. Is it worth me going back a bit and sort of talking about where the campaign came from and how it's changed over recent years?
Yeah, please do that. That'd be great.
Because I guess what I would like to say is that while we're needed, that campaign is needed more than ever now in the cost of living crisis. The fact is that we just have never kept pace with the cost of living. or at least in recent decades in the UK, and that's where our whole campaign came from. And it started over 20 years ago with workers in the East End of London who were working sometimes multiple jobs on the government's minimum wage and not being able to get by, not being able to afford the essentials. And that's why we alighted on this call for a real living wage, one that is calculated based on the actual changing cost of living. So it started as a voluntary campaign. It was quite a local grassroots campaign in London, calling on local employers to pay the real living wage. And that wage rate was then calculated by Loughborough University. It's now calculated with inputs from Loughborough University, but also the Resolution Foundation think tank, and it's overseen by a Living Wage Commission. And we update it every year. But as I alluded to, that used to be changes that were 1% or 2%. But the real change has been this massive leap into double-digit inflation as the norm in the last couple of years. So although it's never been easy to make ends meet on the minimum wage in the UK, it's become almost intolerable pressure on the lowest paid workers in the last couple of years. So we do feel like it's needed more than ever. And what's been incredibly encouraging is that over the last couple of years, I mean, since the pandemic, really, we've seen a real increase in living wage employers. The network has more than doubled over that time. And there's now 14,000 living wage accredited employers in the UK. So it's not just us that's saying this. It's over 14,000 employers who also recognise now more than ever a wage rate based on the cost of living is what really matters to low paid workers.
Okay, thank you very much. So let's just be clear on a couple of definitions here then. What is meant for, I mean, I think a lot of people are familiar with this term, but what is the definition of real living wage? And also you guys have other initiatives, you have other terms, living hours and living pensions. Perhaps you can talk a little bit about those two.
Yeah, so just to clarify, like say the definitions are important. So when I say the real living wage, I mean the living wage that's set by the Living Wage Foundation, calculated by Resolution Foundation and overseen by the Living Wage Commission. It's currently £12 an hour across the UK, and it's £13.15 in London, where the costs of living have traditionally been higher. So it's a voluntary rate, and that's a really important distinction. Listeners will probably have heard, obviously, the UK government has its what it calls a national living wage, which is their minimum statutory wage floor for older workers. So ours is voluntary. The government's, of course, is the legal floor, but also the critical difference is that the government's minimum wage is not based on the cost of living, whereas ours is and is recalculated annually to reflect changes in that. Our other initiatives, it's great that you mentioned these. We've also got something which is absolutely the other side of the coin to wages, which is living hours, because ultimately, even if you are earning a real living wage, if you don't have enough hours in the week to make ends meet, you're not necessarily going to be able to escape poverty or to have a decent lifestyle for yourself. So living hours is our accreditation for employers, which is designed to tackle insecure work, particularly insufficient notice of shifts that are cancelled at the last minute, and also just insufficient working hours. So that's a campaign which we've been running an accreditation since 2020 we launched. And more recently, we also introduced our living pensions accreditation. And that's because today's cost of living crisis is tomorrow's pensions crisis, unfortunately. 4 out of 5 people aren't saving enough for retirement. And that rises up to 95% of low-paid workers. So the Living Pension is our new employer accreditation, which is basically a better standard of workplace pension with 12% annual pension contribution that will allow workers to save up a pension pot to have a decent standard of living in retirement and escape poverty in later life.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the HR Chat Show. IEA Training provides professional development to a changing workforce with changing needs. And we're proud to support this episode of the HR Chat podcast. IEA offers lots of courses, webinars, and on-demand training to meet our students where they are and help them reach their goals. We're proud of our contribution to better risk analysis and high operating standards in the industry. Learn more at ieatraining.org. And now, back to the conversation.
I wonder if you're able to share the percentage, the proportion of folks in the UK who are living below that real living wage. I understand that the minimum wage will increase in April up to £11.44 per hour for workers who are over 21. But you know, there's a difference between the £12 something you mentioned there for the real living wage compared to the minimum wage. How many folks are not even touching that level at the moment?
So it's about, it varies across the UK, but the average is about 12% of the workforce are earning below the real living wage. And the consequences of that are really severe. We did some polling last year that showed that 60% of workers earning below the real living wage had turned to a food bank in the last 12 months. And about 40% were struggling to heat their homes or regularly skipping meals because of financial reasons. So although the number of people earning below the real living wage has come down quite significantly over the last 10 years or so, it used to be about 25%. But the consequences of being below that threshold are incredibly severe. So that's why we continue to call for more and more employers to pay the living wage, and particularly to become living wage accredited, because the conditions of becoming living wage accredited is that you don't just pay it to your directly employed staff, but you also start pushing it for your supply chain. So getting to some of those outsourced workers that are in some of the lowest paid and most insecure jobs in the economy.
What does it say about a company in terms of their CSR, their corporate social responsibility, if they are accredited? You know, what does that say as a potential employer, do you think?
Well, it's one of the biggest drivers of becoming accredited is it improves your reputation as an employer. So 94% of living wage employers see business benefits from becoming accredited. But one of the things they cite most highly, around 85% say that it's enhanced their reputation as an employer to have that badge of being living wage accredited. And around 60% see improvements in their recruitment and retention as a result of being living wage accredited. So it very clearly helps with differentiating employers in a challenging labour market and being seen as an employer of choice.
Okay, this is me as devil's advocate now, okay? So don't think that this is what I believe. But isn't there a case to be made that some businesses need the flexibility? They need to be able to offer below the real living wage amount, something closer to that minimum wage amount, just to be competitive, just to keep going in a very difficult market right now.
It is a difficult market, but ultimately the people that are bearing the worst costs of the cost of living crisis are people on the lowest incomes. And it doesn't really make sense to us at the Living Wage Foundation that you would base your business strategy on poverty wages. We are a developed country. We're one of the biggest economies in the world. And it does, I mean, something that a lot of the business leaders that are living wage accredited say to us is that they couldn't really look themselves in the mirror if they weren't trying to pay a base rate of pay that at least allows their staff to afford the minimum essentials. So things that I talked about, like being able to put food on the table and heat your home. And of course, there's a lot of different actors that have to play a part in trying to bring down in work poverty. And I think we're definitely conscious of the huge pressures that have been placed on business in recent years through one crisis after another. But most employers can afford to pay a real living wage and will see business benefits from doing so. And it is worth saying that it isn't just a cost, it is an investment. As I highlighted, there are some noticeable business benefits that employers see very quickly once they make the change to paying the living wage to their staff. So it's not just a cost, it is an investment as well.
Okay, thank you very much. We are already coming towards the end of this particular conversation, Gail. Just a couple more questions for you. The next one, maybe kind of as a recap of some of the things that you mentioned before, but I'd like to give you an opportunity to sort of press it home in terms of what have been some of those impacts of the living wage campaign so far in terms of on workers, influencing government policy and so on.
Yeah, I mean, the direct impact is really, really exciting for us because we have over 14,000 living wage accredited employers. And that means that there's about 500,000 workers in the UK who see their pay go up annually in line with changes in the living wage rate. That means there's actually across the UK now 1 in 9 employees work for a living wage employer. So obviously there's scope to improve, and we'd love to bring more employers into that number, but it is a huge campaign of businesses, probably the biggest movement of businesses in the UK that are all behind this idea of a wage rate based on the cost of living. We also know that we have what we call the shadow effect of the living wage. So it's not just the employers, the 14,000 that are accredited, but there are many more employers that basically track the living wage, and they use that as their reference point for setting their base rates of pay. So all the big supermarkets do that now, which is really encouraging to us, given the huge numbers of workers that are on low pay within those industries. And we've also influenced government policy. I think we have seen, we've been able to put a consistent upward pressure on the government's statutory minimum wage. And the most obvious manifestation of that, I suppose, was when the UK government rebranded its minimum wage rate for workers aged over 23 and called it the National Living Wage. So trying to borrow the language of our campaign, sadly, they didn't change the methodology behind it in any way to actually take into account the cost of living. But I think we took it as a compliment, to be honest, that was something they felt compelled to do, and that they have actually continually pushed up their statutory minimum wage and what they call the National Living Wage over the years, so that has reduced low pay in the economy as well.
Okay, perfect. And just finally for today, Gail, how can our listeners connect with you? So maybe that's LinkedIn, maybe you might want to share your email address. I bet you're super cool and all over TikTok and places. And of course, how can they learn more about the Living Wage Foundation?
I'm definitely not cool or over TikTok, but the best place to learn about the living wage is just to go to our website, which is www.livingwage.org.uk. I am on Twitter, but I don't use it very much anymore, but I think it's Gail_Irvin_. If you really want to find me, it's at Gail_Irvin_.
Perfect. Well, that just leaves me to say for today, Gail, thank you very much for sharing this very important message and being my guest today.
Thank you.
And listeners, as always, until next time, happy working.
Thanks for listening to the HR Chat Show. If you enjoyed this episode, why not subscribe and listen to some of the hundreds of episodes published by HR Gazette? And remember, for what's new in the world of work, subscribe to the show, follow us on social media, and visit hrgazette.com.